Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Anyway, Jules, we're not to worry. This is the beginning of the Untitled Fighter podcast. The UPP. I'm Scott Zilver, joined by Mr. Jules Gill.
Hello.
As another week of questions and thoughts and different, you know, murmurings on the video game industry come a-flooding, because we're about to embark on a bank holiday weekend, 3 days of doing next to nothing. Mr. Jules Gill, what have you got in store for the next few days?
Well, you know what, my friend, because obviously I've had my first vaccine jab. That means I can start easing up and going up to see people, make plans and stuff.
We can have a cheeky lick.
Yes. So we'll get to that.
I'm coming around, mate. I'm getting my second one tomorrow, and then I'm running tongue first directly.
I'm changing the locks. Changing the address.
I've bought a ladder.
So on Saturday, I'm going over to a friend's house and we're going to do a lovely big Warhammer game, which is going to be fantastic. And then on Sunday, we're going to go and see one of Kerry's relatives, which will be quite nice. And then on Monday, I'm going over to build some scenery for some new Warhammer dioramas, which will be fun. So it's like a nice chilled nerd weekend. And then in between those points, I'll be doing some digging if the weather permits so that I can get the garden landscape going. It's I feel like as I'm saying this, my youth is escaping me. Just kind of, I'm withering like the knight at the end of the Indiana Jones Last Crusade thing.
I feel like you're hanging on to it. You've got like, the Warcraft still keeps you young, I think. Yeah. Or keeps the fantasy, fantastical spirit alive. I'm just going to be just Mass Effect, and more Mass Effect, to be honest. Maybe a little bit of Knockout City in the middle.
Nice.
The world doesn't believe that game's good, and I didn't initially as well, because that game is so, here's some spreadsheet goals we can hit. Like, here's the gliders from Fortnite and the extra art style from Overwatch and whatever.
I'm not going to lie. I thought it was a Fortnite expansion when I looked at the advert, because they've got the same style and everything about it. It's just kind of like, hey, it feels like Steve Buscemi doing his hello fellow kids made this game.
That's definitely the energy that I got when I first put it on. But the gameplay mechanics are really, really solid. And like, cool. It's dodgeball. So it's, and plus the noise that they have when you proper twang someone with a dodgeball is this proper, you know, when you would bounce like a basketball and it sort of does that little like ting kind of noise.
Yeah.
Stotting one of them off someone's face is one of the best little mechanics of the year. So yeah, I've got a version of that on PS5, Xbox and Switch. I'm just playing it. I just want to play it all the time.
Is it free or have you paid for each version of this?
I've not paid multiple times.
Ladies and gents, if you could see his sheepish face right now, what have you spent? What have you spent on this?
I've not spent yet. Right now, it's free on Xbox because it's on Game Pass. Okay. But it is in the launch. It's got a free launch week PS4/5 and on Switch. But they are going to be charging £18 for it after that, which is madness. So I'll continue playing it as long as it's on Game Pass. I'm running. I'm not paying. I mean, I love it, but I'm not going to pay £18 for it. But anyway, this is the Untitled Partner Podcast. We always ask for your questions and thoughts and stuff every week. And we've got a lovely little response. A whole bunch of regulars in the following questions that got submitted. So thanks to everybody for sending stuff in. First question from PG Quips, a regular legend. Who just says, Dying Light 2 thoughts. Just watched the new interview with the developers on the fanciest set I've ever seen, which it really, really was.
Yeah.
Ridiculous. They sort of replaced the back wall and made it look like they were sitting in the game. That
it's
thing was
so
really cool.
Mad, isn't it?
And wondering if you're excited as I am. Love the first one so much. Incredible gameplay. Story not so much, but easily the most fun I've had in a co-op game. Now I must confess, Jules Gill, that I had never played Dying Light. I played the demo. Okay. And that was it. And so I didn't like Dead Island, so I didn't follow Techland to Dying Light.
Yeah.
But I've always heard good things. What's the deal?
I feel like Dead Island gave Dying Light a bit of a stigma because everyone was just saying, oh, well, this is just the same experience, right? But it's actually got so much more on it. It can actually like run, like you say. There's tons and tons of like secrets to find in there. The expansive world is great to explore. It doesn't feel as prescribed as maybe Dead Island did, because Dead Island was like, hey, here's the sewer section that everyone goddamn hated so much. So
I have a super quick question, because the thing that made me run a mile was first person platforming, because I despise that in everything.
Did you not get on well with Mirror's Edge?
No, that's the reason. Oh, that's the reason I've not played Catalyst. I did play the original one. Mirror's Edge was actually the game that cemented it for me, because I was like, oh, if this is the best that first person platforming can be, and I still want to throw up, then I just can't. I hate it. It put me off Dishonored.
It actually doesn't feel like as terrible as you might expect. I actually had a really good time because it felt like everything was contextual. It felt like they planned out the leveling system of being able to run across rooftops and make the jumps. There was elements as well of like really inspiring that feeling of vertigo as well, which I'm like, cool, this is a nice way to make me constantly on edge. Mm-hmm. It's a good game. I would say that there's still like a few flaws to it, which I'm hoping that Dying Light 2 is ironed out. And it definitely looked like it's going in the right direction, because it's more of a story focus. Cool, you're ticking that box, which was a bit questionable in the first game, as PG Quip said before. Then you've got the gameplay, which was already pretty solid. They're building on that with new weapons, new mechanics, new sort of parkour elements that turn your attacks into ways to springboard up and through the levels, which I think is great.
He like jumps on the, that's the thing, looking at the at the Dying Light 2 gameplay made me immediately go and buy Dying Light 1. So I'm gonna dive into it. But that was the thing, when he was running at a zombie that was on the edge of a roof and he jumped
and onto
him
as the crash pad.
He jumped to like cushion the landing. I hope that is a mechanic and not something that's sort of like a half in-game cutscene thing.
Yeah, me too, because I kind of can't wait for people to try and exploit that and see how far you can push the zombie off the thing to go. I would love to see how many falls you can survive by using another human as a crash mat.
But yeah, I mean, I thought it looked super like promising. Obviously, it is interesting because that game has a hell of a development hell. Like, there's the lead director, Paul Machuca. There was a whole report about him being this like tyrannical dude at the head of the studio. He was like living and sleeping inside the offices. It was just this whole thing. And I recently did a video on games that you wrongly think are coming soon, because that thing just seemed to be on fire. But then recently, you know, they've got out there, the new release date is December 7th. They put the video out last night, and it does look super promising.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the build that they showed off is the same one from E3 2019. The same look anyway. They sort of opened it by saying like, hey, last time we checked with you guys 2 years ago.
That is always an interesting one, isn't it? When the developers go like, we've got a brand new game coming out, but here's all the old footage that you've possibly seen before and not at all representative of what is going to be in the final build. It's like, okay, strange move there, pal, to sell me on the brand new experience by showing me old experience.
Remember when you cared like 2 years ago? We're still there. We're still doing
it. You know what? You know the lead director who you were saying was a bit of a nightmare, shall we say? Do you remember that they released a special edition for Dying Light that was like a zombie-proof house edition?
Okay.
Do you remember that? It was like a super special edition.
No, I remember the torso from Dead Island, but that's
let's not talk about that. That was bad times. That was sick eggs in the wrong way.
We've got some boobs.
There was like a special edition order that you could put in. I think it was like one copy. And one of the perks that it gave you was a zombie-proof treehouse. I imagine that the director built that and just lived there, and that's why he went a bit mad.
My mind doesn't know if you mean it's a real-life treehouse.
It's a real-life treehouse, dude.
Okay.
Like, they came and built a zombie-proof shelter in your back garden.
I'm kind of game for that. I mean, how do they make this? Did it have shutters? How do they make it zombie-proof?
I have no idea. Because much like with many of these super special editions that cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to do, no one ever bought it, so no one therefore ratified that it existed. You know?
I hope it's got like a turret on the top or something. But I mean, for me, like Dying Light 2, the footage of it looked so promising that it just made me go, my God, I'm missing out on something. I need to go back. I always knew that I was anyway. People always talk really highly of Dying Light, but it's just that its prices remained so high for so long. I don't know if that's a publisher thing or whether that comes from Techland or whatever, but it is on sale right now. If you're listening to this in the UK, or I guess that'll be part of PlayStation's Days of Play sale anyway. It's super cheap on PlayStation. I got it on Xbox because they've just given it the FPS boost, so it's you can run it at like 60 FPS, which I'm a frame rate whore now, Jules Gale. I ignored Rich Hudson for way too long and Osley P, and their parting words, enforced the reality of frame rates, and I've got there. It's too late. I'm enlightened now, and they're too far gone.
The problem is, though, is that if you listen to them, you fall down the nerd rabbit hole of actually walking out into real life and saying, the frame rate needs a bit of a refresh here. And that's when you know you've got a problem.
Then I'm building roller coasters and it's all gone sideways. But next question from Wayne, who says UBP. Back to you.
UBP.
The same way. What's the grossest food you've ever had to eat? Mine personally is sushi. I'm just personally not a fan.
Fair enough, man. That is like, it's a sushi is an interesting one because if you... Because there's two types, isn't there? There's sushi and sashimi. And sashimi is the one that has the meat on it, isn't it?
Yeah. I think
that's what you're meant to
I've not had it either, to be honest. Not much, anyway.
Sashimi is an incredibly odd thing if you're not used to the idea of eating what is effectively raw fish. Because, like, that has such a specifically pungent taste. Some of the fish meats that you can get.
It's a stinky boy.
Like, some of them are great. Like, if you get, like, salmon... Fine, absolutely tastes brilliant. But there are some out there that have like such a specifically, like almost to the point where they're so salty that it's like, it turns your mouth into like the Badlands. Ooh. It is like, it's too salty for me. So I will agree with you that some sashimi, if you're not used to it, is pretty grim sometimes. But
I have a general thing. I'll dive in a second. What's your butt?
The food type that I've eaten that I thought was absolutely disgusting was oysters with Tabasco sauce in. It was... So the whole concept behind oysters is that you're meant to like almost drink them like a shot. And I was always like curious as to why that was. But lo and behold, I found out the hard way by ignoring the advice of the person who was giving them to me and just went like... scooped it back and just thought, you know what, I'm going to hold on to this effectively runny egg that is now inside my mouth.
Yeah.
And then I chewed it and ye gods, it's like, I don't know if I had a bad one or if it was just like, this is what oysters are, but it felt like I was chewing a wadded up piece of somebody else's chewing gum.
Yeah.
Like it was just, it had textureless and but it was tough, and when I squeezed it, all of this like salty seawater just came shooting out, and I was just kind of like, this is the worst bit about every food combined in one.
That's what I was going to say before, was that I'm not okay with most squidgy things. Like anything where it's just a bit squidgy, I just don't like it. I also have a thing about multiple textures in the same bite. During the bite down, if there's multiple textures, like if it's a cookie and it's all one texture, that's fine.
Yeah.
But if it's sort of like it depends because sometimes liquid centers are okay. I'm trying to think.
Yeah, I was about to say, like, if you like, does that mean you don't like Cadbury's caramel? Like,
I'd rather not. I'd rather have a nice solid chocolate. I don't know. I've got a thing. I can't think what there was something that I had. We've had this discussion before in real life and stuff. But there was something that I had where I bit down and I was just like, oh, it's multiple textures there and I don't like it.
We've had this discussion before.
I can't think. What that is, I think I would.
Was it a burger? You had a burger that was just kind of like, it had a crunchy bit in the middle, and you were like, not for me.
That's the thing. The idea of crunchiness inside a soft.
Yeah.
Thing.
When you don't know that the crunch is coming, and you're just kind of like, what is that? Have I just bitten into a bug? What like is that? Somebody's sort of tooth? Like,
if you're having like chicken and stuff, and there's a little tough bit in there, I just hate it. But give me like soft stuff inside hard stuff, totally fine. Hard stuff inside soft stuff, no. It's got to be one or the other. And the thing I will throw in terms of the grossest thing that I've had is I, for my 30th, or we rather, did our the Hot Ones challenge.
Yeah, so, I saw you.
It was a voluntary thing. But I took it was the second highest bottle of that from the Hot Ones, the show on YouTube, if you go and check that out. We got the, I can't even think what the hell it's called now.
Was it called Da Bomb?
Da Bomb, that's the one.
Yeah.
Da Bomb, that's the one. And they have, it's like 500,000 Scoville or something. It's something ridiculous. And that thing turned my face red, my lips bright red, felt like daggers in my mouth. Good fun.
You looked by the end of it like Brock Lesnar after about 10 seconds of cardio work. You would turn purple and look like a beetroot. I was just like, do we need to roll you down the Charlie Chocolate Factory thing and get you squeezed for all the prune juice thing? It was like, what is wrong with him?
I look like a Final Fantasy villain, like Final Fantasy VI or something.
Just you look like you had Kefka's face paint on, but in real life. I was just like,
I remember like Ewan shouting from the other side of the, because we all did it in my back garden, and Ewan just go, I can see your lips. lips from here. And it was just bright red sort of siren lips. But not to worry. Next question from Uncle Todd, who says, for starters, hope you're all doing very well. Well, same to you.
Thank you very much, mate.
Question is, how do you feel about games allowing you to become OP in the end or in certain earlier areas versus games like Assassin's Creed Odyssey that constantly level enemies to the player? Personally, I love that godly feeling to one-shot anything.
You know what? I've actually just done a list on video games that reward you for not leveling up and talk briefly about like scaling player systems and adaptive difficulty. Uh-huh. And I really like the idea of adaptive difficulty in games like God Hand, because it's like as you get better and as you master the combos, the enemies get harder. And therefore, I feel like it's more rewarding to take them down using said skills. But having it drop back down again if I'm finding things too tough. So it always keeps your level of empowerment at the same level. Mm-hmm. But I have to admit, there is a lot of fun in sections like when you're playing as Sauron in Lord of the Rings Conquest, when you're just smashing hobbits, like you're playing pitch and putt, and you're just going for a hole in one, which is like bam, take that, bam, out the park. And playing as Darth Vader in the beginning of
Force Unleashed
and stuff like that, like those power fantasies are express amounts
prototype
of fun.
For me
so good.
I think
I feel like being overpowered does kind of suck the end game fun out of it, because once you go, cool, I can do anything, where's the challenge coming from then?
I think it's definitely a balance. I will side with Uncle Todd, because I love the build-up. Like, I want to have that payoff towards the end of a game where I'm just smashing enemies that maybe were a challenge in the first place. I love games like Sekiro and FromSoft stuff, Souls or whatever, where you actually, you do level up, you can hit harder, but also you get better as a player, like, fundamentally. Yeah. That was one of the things that was, like, one of the best parts of Sekiro, was that you can master that block system eventually.
Going from the first battle that you have with Genichiro to the last battle before he gets the Sword Saint Isshin out, you're just like, the two battles, they are effectively the same. He uses the exact same moves, but by that point you've played the game enough that you absolutely wreck him. Like, it's like embarrassing for him how badly you whoop his ass,
which is a nice 180 on how much he flattens you at the beginning, and what it feels like to be like, oh my god, all these animations, how the hell am I ever going to learn this? But you do. My favorite is Breath of the Wild, because they let you go to the central castle whenever you want, so it's like, when do you feel ready as a player? You also don't unlock any core abilities other than like going to see the different divine beasts and stuff, so it's like you're only getting better as a hero, which metatextually you're becoming the hero of the land, because Link has lost his memories and everything, and I love that feeling when you finally go to the castle. They save the main Zelda theme. It only comes on when you get to the castle, so it's like, if you,
it's like you're ready.
Yeah, exactly. It's like you're ready, you've taken that long, you've done the Rocky style training montage, you've got all your potions and your food and everything, and you're ready to go, and that theme comes in, and it's like, yeah, that, I absolutely love that feeling. I mentioned Prototype before as well, which was just being a crazy demon the game, which I can go for a good escape fantasy, but it's got to be done well.
Isn't it interesting as well how video game music affects you so much in the gameplay state? Like, I was playing Doom, and I had to switch off the sound because I was, I can't remember if I was listening for the door for like a postal, something happened. I had to literally shut down the audio, and I'm still playing the game, and I was like, this game is so different without music. Like, to the point where I was just like running around, and I was like still having fun, but I was like, wow, the soundtrack of this really, like, it pumps you up so much to the point where you're like, I think it makes you take more risks. I think subconsciously it goes, it's like, and you're like, cool, right, I'm going to go. I'm just going for, I'm charging through, I'm a juggernaut, can't stop me. But when I was, didn't have the sound, I was like, oh, play this like a regular FPS.
Let me take cover. Yeah. I think it's like you said, it sort of encourages you to take risks and dive in a bit. I find that I respond faster because I'm just tuned into that, like a synaptic connection to the game experience or whatever's on screen a bit more. Also, going back to Halo, like, I've been listening to I'm learning the Halo 2 Molnia mix, the Steve Vai mix.
Nice. Yeah.
On guitar, I was like, no, I'm to the point now where I've played guitar long enough, I'm going to sit and learn this mix, because it's one of the sweetest compositions ever.
Yeah.
And going back to that, I was like, that music, man, like that theme, and put that in the background of anything, it just makes it so much more epic. And like, yeah, that definitely, like, Halo without its audio footprint would be a completely different thing. It just, it needs it.
Imagine how satisfying it must be to be like a music creator, right? Like a composer, and then just like sit back and be like, oh my god, I've done it, I've actually made a soundtrack or a theme that will be forever remembered. Like,
I know. Especially with that one as well, because they tied it with the first time you jump on the Scarab tank in Halo 2, which is a big old deal. Anyway. It was a big old thing. Next question from John of the North. Brilliant name. Nice. From John of the North, who says, in games like Assassin's Creed or Hitman that give you a choice, where do you most like to play? Where do you most like to play? On the stealth versus guns blazing scale. I remember that meme that was doing the rounds from Hot Fuzz, where it was Nick Frost's character from Hot Fuzz, where like it was him saying shame when he's got the guns ready. And it's always, whenever you play a stealth game and one alarm goes off, you just end up everybody and then resetting again. I'm someone who'll restart areas over and over to try and do it perfect stealth run, but I know that that's out of vogue. It's just that I guess we grew up with the stealth boom in the 2000s.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This podcast is brought to you by Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it just makes hiring all in one place so easy, because you just get unparalleled access to job seekers. Plus, listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/WCG. Just go to Indeed.com/WCG right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/WCG. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I remember spending so much time playing a video game called Conflict Desert Storm.
With my friend Liam.
And the very first level has one of your characters locked in jail, and the other one has to go and rescue them before the second level begins. You backtrack all the way to the extraction point. And we played it so much that we really found that we got more enjoyment out of the game by using the stealth mechanics to see if we can get to the other player and unlock them without alerting any single guard, to the point where if we did get the alarm triggered, we'd quit and just start again, because there was no bonuses or unlocks for doing it, but it was just great to try that challenge. And I remember from that point on, it was like stealth focused. If I could do it, if I could get through an area without alerting anyone else, I'd feel so much better. And like the Batman games really reward that as well, in the little challenge areas that you've got.
Plus, like, that thing's so, one of the things that I adored about that game was that you had the group, you had like a team of like a sniper, infantry dude, whatever, but I love that you can put someone in a certain place and then change, you can like, you know, beam out to decide to control someone else and the AI will take over. So it's like you put a sniper in place, you switch to someone else, then the AI will do the headshots for you while you're running in as someone else. I was like, that's a great way to sort of do a half step between single player and co-op multiplayer that I haven't seen anyone else do, like to have an AI ready to take over. I thought that was like a really cool way to do it. Next question from Jack Asbury, who says, hey guys, how you do? I hope you're doing well. We are doing very well, especially
right now. Cheers, dude.
It's a good time. I look forward to this podcast every week, as it's always top quality. Well, thank you very much. My question is, does Assassin's Creed 1 need a remake? Seems daft that there's only one of the older ones without one, I guess because they've remastered everything else. I guess they could do.
Is it because of licensing issues or something like that? Like, why hasn't it been like retouched?
The only thing license wise is that that Wood Kid, was it Wood Kid that was on Assassin's Creed 1? I can't remember what the name of the song was that I think is on the credits, but I think it'd be fine. I don't know if it's just because Assassin's Creed, like in terms of the way that franchise is talked about, is that it came into its own with the AC2. Like, yeah. I've always been an Assassin's Creed 1 fan, but it is such a different style of game. It's almost like Hitman.
Yeah, I remember when it came out, everyone had like touted it as being like the next big thing for the action sandbox RPG genre, whatever you want to call it. But I do remember seeing a lot of like 7 out of 10s for it rather than the sort of 9 and 10 out of 10s that clearly they were expecting. So I do agree that it wasn't a polished game, and maybe they don't want to go back to it because it will only highlight the shortcomings of it. Like, people would go, yes, cool, there's some good elements here, but it's just nowhere near as good a game as Assassin's Creed 2 was.
Well, I mean, I get the complaint that there's only like a handful of repetitive, oh my God, my throat.
Oh, he's dying. He's dying, ladies and gentlemen.
Every week he dies. Kenny over here. And I mean, I get the whole thing that it's like there's only like 7 or 8 activities, if that, and they just repeat throughout the entire game. But I personally loved it because I love being the assassin. And in terms of taking people out, like the actual targets, that was one of the only games until Unity brought it back where you literally were like, here's your target. They are walking around a dynamic open world space. Figure out how to take them out. It wasn't so specific. I know the other ones have done bits and pieces of that. But I feel like AC1 was more like a Hitman in an open world. So I always loved that. But yeah, I get that it is sort of like an outlier. And I guess there was that whole story where the creative director's son thought it was more like GTA than it was when he got an early copy like a month before release.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, dad, are there not more side missions? And he's like, no, son, it's Assassin's Creed, not Grand Theft Auto. And then he's like, oh, well, that's lame. And then apparently the whole team had to implement side missions in the course of a month.
Oh, no.
Because of this little, I was going to say spoiled brat, but this little kid, he was just doing his best.
No. It is a spoiled brat if you have the ability to influence an entire video game franchise. Yeah, I'd say that you have more power than you should do.
Possibly. I'd lay the blame on the director, the parent, just being like, oh, well, we've got to do what the 5-year-old says or whatever the 2-year-old says. But yeah, that was one of the reasons why AC1 was kind of all over the place. But not to worry. Next question from Pinky, who says, one serious question and one fairly jovial, both asked with love. Why is hashtag WCGP such a sausage fest? I love you guys so much, but I did realize the pods lack diversity the other day. Second question is, why are police uniforms gender neutral for everything except the helmets?
Whoa, okay, there's a lot to unpack here. I mean, the thing is that when it comes to the What Culture Gaming channel, we've got Amy and Tilly, who have just joining us and started to do more stuff.
That's the thing, is that the answer to that is last year got in the way. And we're waiting.
Yeah. First off, let's just set the record straight for one thing. Scott and I are not the bosses of What Culture. No. We get this so much. Like, do we give off the impression that we run the channel?
We're just that damn professional. I mean, it's just
definitely not on my side.
Not be listen to this and know that we run everything.
Yeah, so we've obviously got bosses that are making decisions about the company that we don't control. But one of their biggest pushes was that when they got this new property that is in Newcastle, that we're all going to be effectively moving back to once the lockdown stuff ends, one of their big pushes is they want to build more channels, get more faces on screen, and of course have a much more diverse roster of people. Mm-hmm. Now, we've unfortunately, as you are aware, we've had to say goodbye to some of our friends over the last couple of years, but we obviously do not have a hand in choosing who comes on board, nor would we ever block people from coming on board.
No, I think it's more, I mean, like, that's the thing. I mean, obviously, like, Ash, Rage, Zoe, like, have all left. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, and you know, you go further back, like the likes of Susie on the wrestling channel and stuff, you can go pretty far back. But you know, everyone was like super close friends. It's like they got incredible opportunities and they took them. Like, it's just the reality is that we have all gone through 2020. And at this point, we're just waiting until we can get back in the office and do the recruitment side of things properly, or at least visualize the people we have brought on board properly. If you're following the other channels, then you'll already know who Amy is. She's been on Horror, she's been on Main. She did a few chatty face videos with us. Like,
we've also got Jess as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, Jess McDonald. Like, you know, we're getting there, but it's a weird time. It's not like we think of this on the daily in terms of just like where we are right now, what we're trying to get back to, and what things are going to look like when we get there. So yeah. It's a problem.
It was one of the hardest things, saying goodbye to our friends across the years. But as Scott said, like, you know, they just got great offers. So why wouldn't they take it?
PlayStation Access. Like, yeah, I mean, when we had the conversations about that, it was like holy words.
Yeah, like we'd never hold anyone back as well. We'd encourage them to go off and try new things, especially if they're like bigger stuff like for them. So yeah,
also police uniforms gender neutral for everything except the helmets.
I didn't even know this.
Is there a gendered helmet?
I don't spend a lot of time looking at police.
No, or helmets for the most part. I've not. It's been a while. But next question from Laughing Sunbro, which is a regular legend. Back to the regulars, Mr. Sunbro. Favorite video game, movie, or TV show? Not an adaptation, but about the industry. The Wizard, Grandma's Boy, Ready Player One. Are there any that you feel like you love or connect with?
Yeah, Indie Game the Movie. It is like hands down the best documentary I've ever watched about the rigmaroles and complete stress breakdown that indie developers have to go through.
I can't think what you call that Atari one as well, where it's the history of E.T. and then burying the copies in the desert.
And that one dude
who was like, I'm going to go find them, and his quest to uncover all these copies in the desert again. I can't think what that one's called. I guess they're more documentaries. But in terms of like video, in terms of movies about video games, the newest Jumanji was surprisingly good.
Or surprisingly
solid enough anyway, in terms of just replacing the board game with a video game. I can't think of that many other ones where a video, there's a horror one. I forget the name of it.
Count the Matrix? I mean, that is literally life inside a simulation.
Like... Yeah, that's more video game themed, I guess. But yeah, in terms of the ones that he highlights, I've seen The Wizard when I was a kid. Grandma's Boy, I've not heard of. Ready Player One, I hated with a passion. So it's like, this is just a spreadsheet of corporate BS come to life. I despise that thing. And I didn't mind the book, but yeah.
Do you know what? I actually, I've got a real soft spot for the Wizard, just because of the fact it's so cringy. It's so bad when he's still like, that's bad when he's got the Nintendo Power Glove, and I'm just like,
is that in first school or middle school? It's been a long time. I remember the Power Glove thing, now that you said it though. Next question from Ruben, who says, I have a cool question. I think, what game series are you hoping not to hear about during this announcement season? Also, be sure to extend my gratitude to Jules. His speeches at the end of videos really helped me out.
Oh, thank you very much, my friend.
In terms of not, what do you hope to not hear about during this announcement season? I don't want a full-on, I know the PS5 is getting revamped for next year, but I don't want to immediately feel like I've missed out. I don't want it to be too big a fancy, I don't want them to get on that too much. I just tweak
the
units.
Mean that if they just suddenly go, hey, you thought the PS5 was hard to get hold of? Wait until you get the PS5 version 2, which is much better than the previous version, making
this one's even more reliable.
Feel like an absolute sucker.
Exactly.
Yeah, that would suck.
The industry does that all the time, where it's like, hey, this thing that you struggled to get that was really hard to get a hold of, hey, there's another iteration of it, and we're going forward. So I want to elongate the generation a bit. I think we're going to be doing that anyway. But I hope that in regards to, I want things to breathe for a little bit before we move on.
In that same vein, I really don't want them to go hard on the whole sort of like, hey, look, you don't even need a console. We'll just stream it live. We'll have a video game streaming services. Because remember how that was like an idea that they kept on trying to push for, like, it was like 2 or 3 years ago. They were like, this is going to be the next big thing. Every single thing is going to be like streamable. Like, you won't even need to do it. You'll just have a subscription and then boom, you can play games like that. Now, I have recently been playing, I played a demo of an upcoming video game, which I can't tell you about, using Parsec. Ooh. Now, Parsec is a great idea in principle, and it worked for the most part, but there is something that is just maybe the slight control delay, maybe the fact that your graphical settings aren't proper, like the fact that you're streaming somebody else's like PC, and there's obviously like communication issues with that. Like, the idea is solid in principle, but it's just not something to really build the industry around just yet. And I really hope that they don't just go, hey, consoles that you've just bought, they're obsolete, bro. Like, it's like, just don't do that.
I think the end game, which is what Game Pass already is just to have an Xbox be an app, PlayStation be an app, and you just connect your controller to the TV and go from there. And I don't know how I feel about that. I love a good console. Like, I loved getting my N64 last year before, whenever it was, whenever I was 30 years old and I got my N64. I love that, getting a new system. And I'm even looking forward to getting it. I want to get a GameCube. I want to get a Dreamcast. Like, I want to do those things. I think there's a quality there that you lose if everything is just streamed. Like you said, it's sort of, it doesn't have the same vibe at all.
Yeah.
So hopefully, I'll totally back that. I hope that we don't embark on too quick a streaming future, because there's too many problems with that, hence Google Stadia and everything else. Final question from Jason Taylor, who says, growing up with Metal Gear Solid, Resident Evil 2, and Legacy of Kain, my top three PS1 games. I might back that, to be honest, top three.
To be PS1 fair, are you sure that you're not just Scott in disguise?
Sadly, Bishy Bashy Special is not on here. Throughout the years, I somehow never played any of the Mass Effect games. Can I get your elevator pitches for the Legendary Edition, but at the same time, talking over each other? We get 20 seconds each.
Oh my God.
That's podcast hell. I'm not going to do that for 20 seconds. I will do 5 seconds. I'll tell you what I think right now.
Okay, so the first sci-fi game
now
that you can
want to pick it up because
I can't do it. Okay. Okay, right. Well, we'll try again. I'm going to compose my thought first, and then I will. So
we'll give another 5 seconds. To be honest, it's really, really good. The thing.
So it's a sci-fi opera in which you basically chew bum with your toffee when you walk. Yeah. That's the first game.
There's a massive step up between Mass Effect 1 and 2. I know we were supposed to talk over each other, but to be honest, the Legendary Edition deserves its own praise because I tell you what, I haven't told you this. The 2017 me is 2021 me's biggest enemy because I rallied against us not including the Crash Insane Trilogy in 2017's Game of the Year because, and I mostly stand by it, that it's an old game, it's a reskin, it doesn't qualify, it's not new enough. Mass Effect Legendary Edition is my favorite game of the year. It's my favorite game on the Citadel, but I can't put it anywhere because it's an old game and it doesn't matter.
Well, you shot yourself in the foot then, didn't you?
I shot myself in both feet and removed the limbs. I can't do anything with it. But that Mass Effect 1, the combat model's brilliant. Mm-hmm. They overhauled it. It's brilliant, it's a beautiful looking game. All the amount of stuff they've done with the visuals, the new lighting effect. I just sat there going like, I bloody love Mass Effect. It's been away for so long and they've done so right by it. Mm-hmm. Having all the DLC on there is just brilliant. And so, yeah, if you've not played Mass Effect, dive the F into Mass Effect. They're all great. Know that there is a massive step up between Mass Effect 1 and 2 in terms of combat. And the Mass Effect 1 is still very much enjoyable. And just as a mythos, it's a
set. Yeah. I would say that the Legendary Edition fixes so much about Mass Effect 1, which mm-hmm. is easily the weakest of the three because it didn't have all of its ideas fully fleshed out. It like told an amazing story and it probably has arguably the second most immersive narrative going.
It's definitely the most RPG of them, like where you're balancing weapon mods and ammo mods and like, yeah, there's more of a focus on dialogue than action.
But they've added in so much that I would totally recommend that you get the Legendary Edition for that version. I would say that going back and playing the original Mass Effect, 2007 release on on any of the old consoles, it's noticeably of that era. Whereas the Legendary Edition has fixed so much that I could conceivably see this being released as a standalone game today and it would actually feel right at home.
Oh, I would genuinely say that the Legendary Edition versions of all three are the definitive ones to the point where they actively replace the originals. Like that was the whole question to bring it back around to Crash and Spyro and stuff. It was, we had that question back in the day of like, would you recommend the NCN trilogy, the Reignited trilogy over the originals? And back then, I don't know, I said no, I think you should play the originals just because I like Naughty Dog's feel in the Crash games. I would recommend the Reignited trilogy over the original Spyros. Where did you come down on that? Would you, if someone was saying, should I play Crash, would you give them the remakes or the originals?
I'd give them the remake of Crash 1 and then I'd tell them to play the originals of Crash 2 and 3.
Sure.
That's, and then Spyro, I would say, well, I personally loved Spyro 2 so much that I would say play the remakes of 1 and 3 and play the original 2.
Because in Spyro 2, the original, you get the better line delivery of, I'm a fawn, you dork. Yeah. Just like, just leading into it. All round Mass Effect is just essential. It's in such a weird spot where it isn't a 2021 game. Like one of the thirds of it is. But for me personally, I can't, I'm living a lie if I pretend that that's a brand new game because it kind of is.
You get so much content with this trilogy. Yes. Like you are going to be playing this for months, my friend.
Oh man, I've platinumed Mass Effect 1. It's quite an easy platinum. Nice. I managed to plat that. That was about 25-ish hours of gameplay. I've went into 2. I've put another 6 hours into that.
Yeah.
I'm going to restart because my cheekbones don't look right. I don't know if this is a thing.
You're going to need to hurry up and get through Mass Effect 3 and platinum that soon as well, because they've said that there's been enough groundswell of popularity to look at bringing back the multiplayer. And
I know.
That once they bring that multiplayer back, they're going to be adding in loads more trophies and you will need to... You need to get them before they tell you that you don't have 100%
of it. I need to see what happened. Because I love the way that they've done the trophies. It's like game specific. And then there's an overarching umbrella of separate trophies. So it's like if you finish all three games on Insanity or you romance someone in all three games, you get a separate trophy. That stuff's really, really cool. All round, though, Mass Effect is really lovely. For now, though, this has been the Untitled Banter Podcast. I've been Scott Tilford, joined by Jules Gill.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you all to sending in all your questions, leaving all the mistakes in. Thanks to all to sending questions in. This has been the UBP.
The UBP.
And we'll catch you guys next week.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.